Good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Education is always a big deal in state budget negotiations. New Mexico continues to rank among the worst for student outcomes, and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle agree we have to do better for students. But deciding how much money to spend on education, what to spend it on, and where to get the money, that's never easy, even when revenue's up, like this year. How could our state spend better? How could our state spending better serve students? Do lawmakers understand the needs at your school or your kids' school? We'll talk through a few education spending bills that legislators are working to pass in the next week. And we want to hear from you. Call now at 277-5866 or comment on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Joining us now in the KUNM studios is Veronica Garcia, superintendent of Santa Fe Public Schools. Good morning.
Good morning, Hannah. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here. And on the line, we have Democratic Representative Roberto Bobby Gonzalez from Taos. Hello there.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks. And Republican Representative James Townsend also on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this time last year, the conversation around education and the budget was basically what's on the chopping block. Oil and gas revenues were down, there was a huge deficit, and lawmakers ended up sweeping a lot of money from school district cash reserves. This year, the revenue outlook is much brighter. Lawmakers have almost $300 million more to work with. Superintendent Garcia, what are you hearing this year from students and families about school funding? I mean, are the conversations different from last year or previous years?
Well, obviously, we're hopeful that we can have our cash balances restored. Representative Townsend's measure, I'm sure he'll want to talk about it. I know that that's been very important to our board because those cash reserves are critical in terms of ensuring if we have an emergency or just cash flow issues, you have to have a certain reserve, and that was certainly important. Compensation for our teachers and our employees, they have not received raises in many years now, and we continue to experience a shortage not only in teaching staff but also, you know, bus drivers and cafeteria workers. The compensation has just not kept up. So I think that is very much on the minds of my community hoping that the legislature will be able, and it appears to be that there are proposals to increase compensation.
Mm-hmm. I do want to get back to that question of pay raises. But one proposal that also has come up year after year is to draw from the state's land grant permanent fund to fund pre-K programs. That proposal was approved on the House floor earlier this week, and now it faces probably a tougher crowd in the Senate. Representative Gonzalez, you were one of only two Democrats this year who voted against that bill on Tuesday. Talk about why.
Very well. First of all, let me start off by, I'm a retired educator, and by all means, I understand the needs. And as Superintendent Garcia mentioned, very much how important this, points that she brought out. I would be the last one to say that, you know, I support wholeheartedly early childhood 100%. What the point that I need to make is, and I have been working with this, and it's taken me some time. It hasn't been an overnight thing. I've been working with this for quite some time, and I'm a member of the Investment Pension Interim Committee. And, after being years on this committee, I understand it very well and what it does and what it provides to us. And the only part that I need to bring in, the point that I'm trying to bring in, is that any time you take from the corpus, and for example, what has happened on the intercept that was done from 4.7% when it was boosted to 5.8%, and that went for eight years, and then for 4 years at 5.5, and now it's at 5%.
Speaking about the percentage that's drawn from the land grant permanent fund, right?
What actually goes to the beneficiaries? I'm sorry. And if that had not had an intercept, right now today, and as it was mentioned, sweeping cash balances and all that, House Appropriations would have had an additional $90 million. So that's what it does, you know, when you have an intercept to the main corpus, and it takes that, then and even though the fund is growing, but again, you know, by having that in place, so last year's distribution, basically right at $750 million, would have had $90 million more.
So you're saying, really, when you get down to the nitty gritty, you're looking out for those future revenues. Is that what I'm hearing?
It's $90 million henceforth, forever. You know, so we do another intercept, it won't be $90 million. It could be $120, $140 million.
I see.
So we keep deepening into this. You know, it defeats the whole purpose. And to say that it's not helping education, of course it is. You know, that's $750 million that would not be in there, you know, to assist with this if we didn't have that. But
I see. Representative Gonzalez, I wanted to ask you about another bill, because you're co-sponsoring a bill that focuses on two things: implementing a new data collection system to ease administrative burdens in schools, and also directing more money to the classroom. Can you talk about your priorities there?
I have a very bad reception, so I'm trying to do my best. Is this House Bill 198?
180, I believe.
I'm sorry. You know, I need to ask you to repeat the question.
I believe it's House Bill 180, focusing on directing more money to classrooms and also implementing new data collection systems.
That's with Representative Larry Lalaniaga.
Yes.
Yes, and the whole purpose is just, going to a base that we can see how much is actually going into classrooms and how much is needed in classrooms. And the proponents of it, and also, have mentioned, you know, we have to realize that every district is different, and that is true. But again, it gives us a sense of, you know, is dollars, are they really going to where they should be? And this is what it does.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bobby Gonzalez of Taos. Does our state government spend enough on education? What changes in education spending do you want to see come out of this legislative session? Call us now, 277-5866, or tweet with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. I'm going to go to a question for Representative James Townsend, Republican from Artesia. We mentioned just now the cash reserves, which were swept last year from schools. Talk about, what are you hearing from constituents about how those cuts affected schools and why you wanted to add that money back in?
Well, thank you, Hannah. And I will tell you right off the bat that Representative Gonzalez and I have not only are we good friends, but we're both working as hard as we can to better New Mexico. In particular, in the 2017 budget year, when things were in such disarray economically, we had little choice but to sweep cash balances of $40.8 million across New Mexico school districts. My bill, House Bill 141 this year, in a year when we had so much, about $250 million new dollars to our economy, I thought that replenishing those was a responsible move. Many schools in New Mexico today, about 20% of them, are on emergency funding. And the cash that they have on hand at the end of the year is the cash that allows them to prepare for the next year. That includes changes in enrollment. It is renovations and repairs and modifications to buildings. And my House Bill 141 was just that. It put that $40.8 million back into each individual school district as it was swept last year, and it was in an effort to make those schools more financially stable for the future.
And do you expect that will pass through the Senate?
No. No, ma'am, I don't. I think it has gone about as far as it can this year. 141 was tabled in appropriations, and it was allowed for in House Bill 2. So I think it's dead for all practical purposes.
Which is really
Yeah, Superintendent Garcia, thank you.
Is really unfortunate because the districts, I believe, helped contribute to solvency and to help the state when their reserves were low. And now that, you know, we see this increase in revenue, it just seemed fair that those cash balances would be restored. And I know that we very much appreciated this attempt by Representative Townsend to restore them. And it really is unfortunate that it was tabled.
And Representative Townsend, we'll let you go. Thank you so much for being on the line this morning. And Veronica here in the studios, did you want to respond at all to the idea of the land grant permanent fund and where, you know, if we're not restoring those cash reserves, where do you think this money for schools should come from?
Well, I want to go to, and I, with all respect, because Representative Gonzalez and I have worked together for many, many years, and we've been allies on many educational initiatives. I have a different point of view, looking at the financial analysis of what the impact of this would be and the savings. You know, if we look at what Nobel Prize winner laureate economist James Heckman has said, this is the best economic driver investment in early childhood education. And the savings that we would see upstream from less incarceration, less drug use, less dropouts, less special education, investing early. This fund has, I think, when this initiative first started, has grown 10 times over. Put there before us to invest in public education. We think that there are safeguards in the measure to save the corpus of the fund, to make sure that, you know, if there are changes in the stock market or gas and oil, because this is a multi-funded strategy in terms of that fund. It's not reliant on any one funding stream in terms of gas and oil or the stocks. And so, therefore, that fund is secure in the language that was written in the bill. And we believe that there isn't the revenue to be able to fully fund early childhood education in the manner that it needs to have a significant impact on educational outcomes. And that's what we're all looking at. Is it a silver bullet? No, but it has the highest potential on return on investment to making it to be a game changer in New Mexico around improved educational outcomes and not be scraping the barrel, being at the bottom of the barrel as we've been for many, many years.
You're talking about, of course, it's not a silver bullet, but with that return on investment, what do you think that pre-K system would have to look like in the state to really get that full return?
So we're looking at an aligned program starting with home visitation so that early on parents are taught, you know, how to teach their children, you know, building vocabulary, interacting, but then also trauma, you know, social work if there is abuse in the home and whatnot, because we know that those negative impacts cause adverse childhood experiences, affect brain development, and can last a lifetime in terms of negative impacts. Quality early childhood education with 3- and 4-year-olds that in their environments, you know, where they're getting daycare services, that we maximize that in terms of the educational impact that they're receiving. And then, of course, quality pre-K, and that it be universally provided for those that want it. And part of the issue is ensuring that children come to school ready for kindergarten. And if we look at other countries that are exceeding our educational outcomes, they have invested heavily in early childhood education. And as Representative Gonzalez says, I think everyone understands that. It's just how do we fund it? And we have limited resources.
Right. And that is just the sticky question year after year. You can call into this show 277-5866. Are you a teacher or school administrator? Where do you think more money should be going in your district? Do you have students in New Mexico public schools? What resources do they need more of? Another question here for Superintendent Garcia. the budget bill and the governor's budget proposal has included a lot of about $5 million for these merit pay programs. So bonuses for teachers. She's also had other programs like Teach Plus and sort of rewarding exemplary teachers. Do you see those as successful in improving quality of public education?
I don't. And there's research behind that. One of the biggest was the Vanderbilt study, where math teachers were paid a significant amount of money, much higher than this, $15,000, for improved outcomes. They saw a bump the first and second year, and then it declined. And we have to look at educators and really look at what is the prototype or the personality of educators. They go in, think of the teachers that you had that motivated you, that you learned a lot from. Would they have given more if they had received a bonus? Are they holding back because it's not incentivized? And so it probably, you know, that sort of bonus might work in perhaps a business environment, possibly. But education is so different. It's relational. And I believe that our teachers are not holding back. But if you give me a little more money, I'm going to put a little more effort into my kid. I think what we really need to look at, are we compensating our teachers appropriately? Are we providing them? Where I would like to see this money go is for school districts that want to extend the school day or the school year to give our teachers more collaborative time, more planning time, so that they can better work together on mapping the standards, learning from each other, how to prove outcomes. That would improve their pay. But the research shows that it really does not make a difference long term on improving educational outcomes. I think there's better ways to use that money and to treat our teachers like the professionals that they are and provide them the support and the opportunity to collaborate.
And we'll continue to talk about some of those other possibilities. Let's take a quick break now. Keep those calls and comments coming. The number is 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from Friends for the Public Library, presenting Books to the Big Screen, a book-to-film adaptation event, February 15th through 17th, 7 p.m. at the Chemo, featuring Daphne du Maurier. Info at abqlibrary.org.
Prosecution for capital crimes on tribal land is up to the federal government. But do tribes also have power over whether criminals face the death penalty? On the next Native America Calling, we'll sort out the complex jurisdiction questions that relate to the death penalty and why almost all tribes use their influence to spare criminals' lives.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, education spending. Do New Mexico's public schools get enough funding? Are we spending it on the right things? Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. You can also always join in the conversation on Twitter. We're going to go straight to a listener comment now. Lois from Sandia Park, you are on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is Lois. I head up a center at the UNM College of Education for Excellence in Early Learning called Family Development Program. And my comment is that I believe education has to follow the brain science, where we're really understanding a continuum of learning that starts at birth, that goes into our public schools. And so I've always thought about investment as needing to have a three-legged stool. We have to have strong early childhood investment, strong public education, and strong higher education. And so I wanted to ask the guests online that if the land grant fund is not the right place to build the three-legged stool, where are the dollars for robust investment in a continuum of learning? Thank you.
That does seem to be the many million dollar question here today. Thank you, Lois. Superintendent Garcia, did you want to say anything there?
Sure. You know, at my work, previous to being superintendent of schools, I was executive director of New Mexico Voices for Children. where I was part of the coalition of Invest in Kids Now, a lot of research into working with the local and state economists of where could we find funding sources to make the sort of robust investment that would be required to really change and move this system. And this was the only one that we could find that would be appropriate as a funding source and could make the sort of substantial investment to really move it forward. And even what we are requesting from the fund would not be, I think it would only cover probably half of the identified need. And then, of course, we have the sufficiency lawsuit that is pending in terms of whether or not our K-12 schools are sufficiently funded. And so then again...
Right, and that, just for context, that alleges that the state has underfunded education in such a way that puts Native American students, English language learners, other students at a disadvantage.
That's one aspect of the lawsuit. The other is just plain sufficiency, because that is a requirement under the Constitution.
Right. I want to welcome also another guest by phone. Fred Nathan is Executive Director of Think New Mexico. Hi there, Fred.
Hi there. Good morning, Hannah.
Thanks for being with us. I'm going to jump back to a bill that we discussed briefly with Representative Bobby Gonzalez a bit ago. This is a bill about spending on classroom instruction. Talk about the research behind this policy.
Okay, so... Several years ago, there was a study done by the Southwest Educational Development Laboratory, which is sort of an independent think tank like Think New Mexico, and they looked at 1,500 school districts in Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, and New Mexico, and they concluded that student achievement is linked to spending patterns, and money matters when spent on instruction. And the study found that, in general, high-performing school districts spend a larger percentage of their budgets on instruction and a lower percentage on general administration than do lower performing districts. And they also tend to employ smaller numbers of administrative staff. And so this is really designed to encourage districts to maximize dollars to the classroom where the actual learning takes place and to minimize spending on administration, which doesn't have the same sort of returns. And so, you know, I agree with a lot of your guests. There are no magic bullets here, but this is something that is part of the equation in terms of turning around public schools and getting better results.
And this bill that your organization drafted, it's a bipartisan bill, 24 sponsors. Talk about how Think New Mexico selects those education funding related measures that you think will have legs politically, because we know a lot of things are really split along party lines.
Correct. We look generally to work on issues where you know, that it will have a big impact on New Mexicans, so they need to be large enough to do that, but yet small enough to be politically achievable. And I think this is one of those issues that's become very ripe, and I think more and more, you know, as indicated, as you said earlier, we have about 24 sponsors. So I think this is resonating with people on both sides of the aisle as something, you know, it's, again, not the only thing that needs to happen, but in terms of spending on education, we first have to assure ourselves that we're getting the money where we need to, which is to the classroom. And I think it would be complementary to some of the other efforts. I think there'll be a big push next year to spend more money on education, and I think that's more likely to be successful if we can show legislators, policymakers, and others that the dollars are getting where we're taxpayers and where legislators want that money to go.
All right. Are students of color, rural schools, and low-income districts getting a fair cut of state education spending? You can call into this program 277-5866 or 1-877-899-5866 if you're outside of the Albuquerque area. You can also email letstalknm@kunm.org. So I wanted to mention a study by the Learning Alliance of New Mexico and UNM researchers. They did a big outreach study in conjunction with the state's ESSA or federal education plan. They reported back that students say what motivates them is often, one, when schoolwork has real life connections, two, positive relationships with teachers or mentors, and three, extracurriculars that are fun. So this is a question for both Superintendent Garcia or Fred Nathan. Is it possible to legislate those sort of qualitative factors?
Well, I think in some ways requirements around career technical education, opportunities that I think we put in when I was cabinet secretary for dual credit, online learning, AP, expanding those opportunities. In Santa Fe, we've embarked in an initiative with our community on identifying the attributes of the graduate to do backward planning in terms, because we're now beginning our first phase of our next 5-year strategic plan. And in looking at those attributes of the graduate, were the soft skills, the relevant education, what our community, our employers say that they're looking for their students, and hearing from the students themselves about, you know, what they value. And relevance is certainly important. And so how we structure our curriculum around career pathways, around having project-based learning that is genuinely needed by the community, by different, say, for example, in the medical field, students could work on a project that is actually has relevance in that field of study. And so we are moving more and more that in that direction. But I think that is really important because our kids want to see the relevancy and how that is going to impact them in their future study or in their careers.
I do want to get back to that idea, but let's take a listener call now. Joe in Albuquerque, did you have an idea about how to fund all of this?
Yeah, my question is whether anybody's considering legalizing and taxing marijuana along the lines that Colorado has done to generate millions and millions of dollars for their public school system. Thanks. That's my question.
Thanks for that question. And I'm actually now going to welcome on the phone Democratic Senator Mimi Stewart of Albuquerque, also the majority whip in the state Senate. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I guess first, do you want to say anything to that listener question? What about taxing marijuana for school funds?
So I'm sorry that I have not heard your program so far. So I just want to tell you that I'm on cold here. So
that was pretty much the question was we just had a listener from Albuquerque.
Right. Well, you know, it's certainly working in other states. In Colorado, they're receiving $250 million a year from the regulation and taxation of their cannabis program. And they are dedicating it to schools. They're dedicating a portion of it to ensuring that young people do not begin to smoke marijuana. So they have a 21-year age limit. I think it should be even 25. But nevertheless, other states have been very successful in using the revenue stream from their program. So I think it's eventually going to happen in New Mexico. Nothing could happen under this governor because of her opposition. I do think as we move forward, we could see that happening in New Mexico.
Senator Stewart, do you think the pre-K funding proposal that we've been talking about, the land grant permanent fund proposal, will reach the Senate floor this session? I mean, it's died in Senate committees in past years. And if it does it have the votes to pass?
You know, I can't answer that. I just don't know. I think the committee process up here is very important to not only pass things that we can agree on, but to keep things from passing that the parties don't agree on, that some of us believe would be very bad for the state. And so it's not good to try to undermine the committee process for what you want, because something you might not want could also then be passed. So I don't know about either of those questions. Certainly, every year in the past, it's the Finance Committee that doesn't doesn't think that using a chunk of the fund will make it continue to grow in out years. And we now are getting $750 million a year from that land-grant permanent fund. The bigger the fund grows, the larger the distribution. So we certainly are probably going to pass it out of education tomorrow morning that we're meeting at 9 o'clock in room 311. There's a few amendments we have to make to it because it was drafted with errors in it. But so we're going to amend it, and then I'm pretty certain the education committee will pass it out. And after that, I just could not tell you.
All right, Senator Stewart, thank you. I'm going to keep you on the line for a few more minutes. But right now on the line, we have Acting State Education Secretary Christopher Rzeczkowski. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks. I'm going to jump right in. Lots of things we'd like to ask you this morning, but your comment last month about charter schools and Manifest Destiny and how charter schools fit into the American dream, that led to a lot of criticism that you lack understanding of the history of oppression, colonialism, imperialism in New Mexico. We're curious, just how do you plan to win people's trust back?
So, I mean, our goal as a community, and I'm sure Senator Stewart was just on, would agree, is to improve student outcomes for all kids. And that includes our English language learners, our students from Native American communities, our Hispanic students. And I think we have to continue to travel the state and see what's working in our schools and continue to share it statewide. I've been out to Wauwatosa High School. I've been spending time in Central Consolidated School District, the Gallup School District. I've been spending time in schools in Albuquerque where things are working. I'm going to continue to do that.
What are you seeing specifically that's working?
So there's a lot of incredible things that are working across the state. I think schools that are seeing dramatic results in places like Belen and Alamogordo and Farmington are embracing data-driven thinking, are looking at how every single kid is doing and are pinpointing how to help students grow. They generally have remarkable school leaders. They're making sure that there's a remarkable school leader, a school principal in every single building. They're creating a culture where parents and kids and families own their future. They actually know how they're doing. They're incredibly honest with their kids about how they're doing in reading and math and what type of remediation or intervention they need. I think Alamogordo Public Schools is a great example of that, where they're engaging parents in new ways and they're creating new teacher collaboration opportunities in Alamogordo as well. And so there's at least a dozen districts that are showing double-digit results in math and reading, and there's tons to learn from out there across the state.
Thanks, Secretary. I want to give Senator Mimi Stewart of Albuquerque a chance to respond or bring up any other questions to do with this legislative session while I still have you, Senator Stewart.
Okay. And I can stay on a little bit longer than I thought originally. Our committee has been delayed. Well, we're just all so grateful that the revenue stream is positive this year. I believe that the legislature and the governor both, that we've done real damage to the public schools the last few years with taking cash balances, not giving any kind of salary increase so that take-home pay actually goes down for educators because we haven't paid for increases in insurance. We haven't paid for energy costs in the schools. Every superintendent that I've talked to is very concerned about losing teachers because of the low pay and the unfair, draconian teacher evaluation system. These are problems we've been hearing about for years. So finally, this year, we can start backfilling some of those funds that we've swept. We are trying to restore at least some cash balances. We are trying to do an across-the-board salary increase. Now, to her credit, the governor's budget came in with some very positive things for education, including, I think, her first ever across-the-board salary increase. So we've upped that a little bit in the legislature, but we're certainly grateful that she came in with a really positive education budget, and I'm sure that Mr. Rzeczkowski was part of that, and so thanks go to him, too. So we at least have some bright things this year without these cuts and with trying to restore restore some things, try to keep these teachers from leaving the state. We have a teacher shortage. Certainly, we need to look at improving our schools, but right now, we're desperate to close these gaps with pay, better pay, et cetera. So it's better than it's been in many years up here.
All right, we need to go to a quick break. Keep those calls and comments coming. You can reach us at 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
Support comes from Live Nation, presenting Chris Stapleton's All-American Roadshow August 9th at Isleta Amphitheater with special guest Marty Stewart and Brent Cobb. Tickets available Friday at 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster.com.
If you loved your car or your truck or RV, but it just doesn't do for you what it used to, don't feel bad. By donating it to KUNM, it will give you a great feeling again, knowing you've done a wonderful thing for the community. The folks at our Vehicle Donation Center arrange for a tow truck, title transfer, and handle all the details. One call and you can keep that love going. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Hey, I'm Jade Simmons, and I'm so excited to be behind the mic again. We have tons of amazing concert highlights on the way, including music that pianist Elizabeth Rowe says sounds like the end of the world. The Anderson and Rowe piano duo give a wild performance of La Valse by Maurice Ravel on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking about education and the state budget process currently underway. Are you a student, a parent, or a teacher? Do you think state lawmakers are making good choices when it comes to public school funding? Join the conversation. Call 1-877-899-5866. On the line now, we have Acting State Education Secretary Christopher Rzeszkowski. I want to talk briefly about the sufficiency lawsuit going on. We mentioned a minute ago with Superintendent Garcia. This is an issue that affects many students across the state. How do you see your role in addressing inequality in our education system?
Well, the Public Education Department over the past 6 years, and I don't think we talk about this enough, has had a huge focus on equity and access for all kids. And during Governor Martinez's administration, more than $350 million have gone into state education. As you heard Senator Stewart say before, we're all sort of in unison this session that another $50 to $100 million are going to go into. So during this administration, over $400 million more dollars are going to flow into public education. But perhaps more importantly than that is how we target those resources and how we make sure those resources actually follow the child and how we make sure that those federal and state resources are getting to our kids most in need. And when you look at a lot of the programs that Governor Martinez and the legislature have sponsored and have supported, like pre-K, like K-3+, like principals pursuing excellence, the money is generally going to our most struggling schools. And we just announced another $50 million package for our struggling schools under our Every Student Succeeds Act plan as well. So more and more money is going to the schools that need it the most.
All right. Going to take a listener call now. Jessa from Albuquerque, you are on the air. What's your comment?
Thank you for taking my call. So I wanted just to highlight that the inequities in education begin long before children enter kindergarten. So the gap between children of color and their white counterparts begins at an early age and lasts through higher education. And this is particularly pertinent in New Mexico because 8 of 10 children are children of color. So like taking, for instance, the fourth grade reading levels, which is a really important data point because early literacy begins, birth to 5, and then, the reading level at fourth grade predicts if you graduate from high school or not. So for instance, 90% of Native American fourth graders are below reading proficiency level, 90%, 83 for Hispanic, Latino children. And then if you look at white students, it's 61%. So there's huge gaps in the data percentages there. So going back to, you know, how do we do it? And we were talking about funding from the Land-Grant Permanent Fund for early childhood. And if we continue to stall on not funding early childhood at the levels needed, we put at risk our K-12 investment because we aren't ensuring that children reach kindergarten ready to learn. So with that, you know, the Permanent Fund for Early Childhood Education, HJR1, has made it through the House and is now in the Senate. So I'd like to see how do we ensure that we can, you know, boldly fund early childhood education and continue to make sure that we build that up so that we don't continue with the status quo. So that's my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jessa. And thank you for bringing in some of those statistics. I appreciate that. A question I'm going to put to Senator Stewart before we have to let her go. Katie on Twitter says it's impossible to tell if the budget funds special education with enough money because it's not a line item in the budget. Senator Stewart, what do you say about that? How do we know the details of special education funding?
Well, the special education units are woven into our state equalization guarantee. So every district, when they put in their budget, they show the special education teachers and ancillary personnel and classrooms that they need. And then it's funded through the state equalization guarantee. So I have been concerned for many years about not really being able to see that as a line item because of the maintenance of effort that we have to do with the federal government. And we've been short on our maintenance of effort. What that means is that we're supposed to be funding special education at the same level that we do each year so that we don't supplant the federal money that we get. So it's hard to tell, but it's woven into that state equalization guarantee. And if we are funding what's called above the line, the state equalization guarantee, adequately, then special ed should be funded adequately. When we're not funding the SEG adequately, and that's been the last several years, everyone is short, including special ed. I heard a few days ago about a special education teacher that has 14 kids in a class when they're supposed to be 8. So we have loosened the requirements for class size over the last few years because we have not had enough money to sufficiently fund the schools. So hopefully as we move forward with more revenue, we will continue to fund that SEG adequately.
Thank you, Senator. Secretary Roszkowski, what do you think about that? I mean, how high of a priority is ensuring access to special education?
I think it's a critical priority. I mean, I've traveled the state and seen so many good things happening. You know, our special education graduation rate has been on the rise over the last 5 years. And as I shared before, we've put over $400 million more dollars into the SEG, into the state equalization guarantee. And this year, we've worked with the legislature to support more funding for the quote-unquote at-risk line, which, again, is more money to make sure that it's getting to our students from low-income communities, our English language learners, and our students with disabilities. So I mean, we think we need more resource there. But I also think things like House Bill 210, which is going to be heard tomorrow in House Education Committee, which actually makes sure that, to the caller's point, every single child is reading at grade level no matter where they start, no matter if they come in to a three-year-old program, a four-year-old program, or if their education starts in kindergarten. You know, we live in an era of personalized learning. And so are we tailoring our instruction and our intervention and our parent engagement to every single child's needs so that every single child is reading at grade level by the time they move on to fourth grade? And I think tomorrow House Bill 210 is something that hopefully the House Education Committee jumps on board so that every single child is reading at grade level by fourth grade.
All right. We've got a lot of calls on the line. Let's take Representative Martinez, a co-sponsor of a bill that we were speaking about earlier. What was your comment?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me. Three quick points. First of all, the corpus of the fund will not be touched.
The land grant permanent fund.
The land grant permanent fund. It will continue to grow at a very healthy rate throughout the coming years. Number two, the unmet need is estimated to be anywhere between $300 and $400 million. in early ed. And that's critical because 80% of a child's brain develops by the age of three. If we're not tackling those first 3 years, we're losing those kids to the criminal justice system and to drug addiction and other problems. Number three, I don't want to gloss over what one of your callers commented on earlier. 8 out of every 10 kids in New Mexico are kids of color, Native American, Hispanic, and African American kids. Yet 90% of fourth grade Native American kids cannot read at a proficient level. 80-some percent of Hispanic kids cannot read at a proficient level. We can keep looking for excuses not to invest in early ed from the permanent fund, and that's fine. But I want to make it clear, we will be failing kids of color, and we will be failing this state because this state is already a minority-majority state. And as the years go by, those numbers will increase of kids of color, and we're failing them. So the time to do it is now, and I'm hopeful that the Senate will take up our measure and make it happen this year. Send it to the voters. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Angela from Albuquerque, what's your comment?
Hello, my name is Angela Adkins, and I'm a product of New Mexico schools, but I'm living in San Antonio, Texas, and working as a Social Security attorney. Early childhood education is absolutely necessary to make sure that people who have learning disabilities are detected early so that they can get the treatment that they need. I can't tell you how many times I have a 10-year-old who comes in and had a learning disability at birth and was not properly addressed, and now has a whole slew of other issues that could have been fixed at 3, 4, 5 years old. I also have teenagers and young adults who should be, you know, planning careers, but instead they're applying for Social Security because their issues weren't addressed early. And it's so frustrating that that New Mexico is still not properly funding early childhood education, because in 2005, we asked the legislator for $10 million to get early education for everybody, and we only got 6, and that was 13 years ago. And if we want a better educated state, if we want a more productive state, we're trying to build a house without building a foundation, because without early childhood education, our state's going to continue to be at the very bottom of every list educationally.
That's a good metaphor, I think. Thanks, Angela. Let's take a call now from Carmen in Santa Ana. Carmen, you're on the air. What would you like to add?
I'm a parent of 3 children in elementary school in the Rio Rancho School District. And then professionally, I run a college access organization called College Horizons that serves Native American students. So I wanted to bring in higher education and access to it. The preparation for college starts before kindergarten. And so I'm someone that supports the early childhood education. We know children that are coming into schools, this is where you can talk to your kindergarten teachers and occupational therapists at school that have to work with children who aren't ready to even hold pencils in kindergarten. And that's the work of preschool. Now, how you tie it to college, because that's where it starts. It's the reading for college that preps them for the entrance exams and the tests that they have to take. But on the high school side, students do not enter higher education from a vacuum. We've got proposed legislation to require all New Mexico students to complete a college application. It can't just happen on its own. So I'm an advocate for high school counselors, and this is the week of celebrating school counselors. And they need the time to have the resources and support around college counseling. Our high school counselors have to do so many different duties that the college counseling gets pushed to the side. So there needs to be a focus in the schools to be hiring counselors specifically to focus on college and career readiness and to support high school graduation rates. But it's all tied together that we have to have systems in place. I was also deposed as part of that insufficiency case. And I can tell you that our rural schools are not getting the support that they need in college and career readiness. That's why they come to my program in the summer, is that we're filling those gaps of the schools. And it's that they need that support structure.
Thank you, Carmen. I'm going to pause you there because I want to put those questions to Secretary Roszkowski. A caller earlier said, you know, the three-legged stool, two of those being early childhood and higher ed, and we've been hearing a lot from callers about those two. How do those two fit into the governor's priorities this session? So early childhood support and then support for higher education.
Yeah, so, I mean, a couple of things. I think you heard the caller talk about where we were just 10 years ago in early childhood and where we are now. And under Governor Martinez, the number of kids enrolled in early childhood programs has quadrupled. And so let's start there. Let's continue upon that trajectory. To Representative Martinez's point, I think we're a couple of years away with the dollars, with a meaningful plan, and actually with a strategy and some policies in place to actually support teachers, hold schools accountable, to make sure parents and families are aware of pre-K options. I think we're going to get there as a state over the next 5 years when you put those three things together. It's not just the funding, but it's a plan and some policies. Second, to the caller's point, I mean, I love what you're doing with College Horizons, so I want to commend the caller on that. I'm a big fan of the Native Minds program at the University of New Mexico. And let's look at schools that are doing the work the caller just talked about. I mean, we have a school in Albuquerque, right in Albuquerque's backyard, Mission Achievement and Success Charter School, serving 700 kids, K-12, graduating their first class this year, that's doing a lot of the work at that school right there in the heart of Albuquerque and is now opening up a second campus. And so when we have examples of schools that are doing the work, the early childhood, the early literacy, the college counseling, it's our responsibility to get in there and learn from them, see how they're allocating resources, and then replicate it throughout Albuquerque and throughout the state.
All right. Going to go to a caller, Charles in Santa Fe. We're running low on time, so keep it to about 30 seconds. You're on the air.
Yeah, just want to remind the audience that the sufficiency lawsuit that's been talked about, it would amount to about $600 million to sufficiently fund the schools. The personal income tax reductions done under Governor Richardson and the corporate income tax reductions done under Governor Martinez, plus with both with Democratic legislatures, that those reductions that were made, we would have over $800 million more in the budget this year. We could totally sufficiently fund education.
Thank you, Charles. A last quick question for Fred Nathan, Executive Director of Think New Mexico. A lot of hairy questions, especially about how to fund all of these initiatives. Any ideas about what Think New Mexico's research will look like in the next coming years? Quickly, about 30 seconds.
Well, I don't know about coming years, but I just wanted to add there are things we can do right now. For example, a second part of House Bill 180 is to reduce the 140 reports that every superintendent, including Veronica, who's on the show as well, can tell you is really excessive, really burdensome on administration. So there's some things we can do right now to reduce administrative costs. And, for example, the Thornburg Foundation has said that if we go to an advanced data collection system where the districts just upload their data instead of producing these 140 reports, save about $46.5 million, which could be deployed to the classroom where it's needed.
All right, Fred, thanks for that. Secretary Roszkowski, final thoughts. Is the governor going to get her priorities done this session?
I think right now we're in a really good place. I mean, I want to commend Fred and the team over at Think New Mexico for doing the kind of bipartisan, nonpartisan work. I did the same thing about the Gentry Ivy Soto bills, House Bill 22 and House Bill 23. I think there's a ton of room right now for bipartisanship on education. I think there's a lot of shared beliefs around both accountability and support, what I call kind of both and propositions.
All right, Secretary Roszkowski, I have to pause you there. We're really glad you joined us this morning. It is the first time in years that a high-level official in the state public education department has has agreed to speak with our newsroom. We have been trying, so I appreciate that this morning. That's all the time we have today. Thank you to everyone who called in. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter. Comment on our Facebook page. If you missed any part of the show today, you can listen on our website. I'm Hannah Colton. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Victor Onimale screened your call. Sarah Trujillo live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.